When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
I want to thank all the labor unions here in Dane County that help keep SlysOffice.com up and going so you keep up to date. Whether it be the Madison Firefighters, Local 311, or the Madison Teamsters, Local 695, or our friends at Madison Teachers Incorporated. These are some of the most active local unions who organize, and constantly stand up for workers. Thank you from SlysOffice.com. Welcome to another podcast at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by our friends with Madison Firefighters, Local 311, Madison Teachers Incorporated, and Madison Teamsters, Local 695. Joining us now, John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation, live from Billings, Montana today.
I am in Billings, Montana, which, by the way, is beautiful today.
Yeah. You
know, it's very sunny and mountainous.
Oh, well, it's not sunny or mountainous. Okay. The sun never shines in Wisconsin anymore. All right, well, I would be remiss if I didn't start out with Robert Mueller.
Intelligence officers who were part of the Russian military launched a concerted attack on our political system. The releases were designed and timed to interfere with our election and to damage a presidential candidate.
The president.
All right, so that's one of the more important things that he said. Donald Trump, he's looking at this just a little bit differently.
No, Russia did not help me get elected. You know who got me elected? You know who got me elected? I got me elected. Russia didn't help me at all. Russia, if anything, I think helped the other side.
Don't you hate a narcissist who uses poor grammar?
Well, you know, actually, because I cover politics for a living, I actually enjoy the sport of it, you know, doing it right, doing it wrong. I am always struck by this aspect of Trump, which is quite fascinating. The proper answer to that question is, you know who got me elected? The American people.
Yeah, well, a narcissist
elected,
would
right?
be. A narcissist would.
I got me elected?
I know.
Couple things about that interchange there that I think are important. Number one, did you know that Robert Mueller had like such an old guy voice?
Well, I hadn't heard him for a while. He sounds a little different than the last time I heard him. You know, during 9/11, I heard him from time to time, but it's been a while. Yeah.
Yeah, and it was different. It was a little bit. It was different than I anticipated. What I'd hear, just how he would present. He presented, sort of like an elder sort of thing, and I actually think it lent him a certain amount of authority there, right? You know, it didn't sound like some guy who was just like wildly spouting off. And so he came off very well. And then in that statement, it's very, you picked the right statement. It's quite a fascinating one. It's because what he said, and I don't know if I get the words exactly right, but it's just essentially Russia intervened to, you know, affect the presidential campaign, to help, you know, help or harm. And that's a really, that's a blunter, deeper statement than I think we've had. You know, certainly we've had partisans who said that, but this is why it mattered so much that Mueller got up and gave his statement. Because, you know, he very bluntly stated a reality that's a big deal.
Here is Donald Trump.
He said, essentially, you're innocent. I'm innocent of all charges. And you know the thing that nobody brings up? There was no crime.
Here is Robert Mueller.
If we had had confidence that the president clearly did not commit a crime, we would have said so.
The president.
No, it's one or the other. I found that, obviously, the exchange there is a fascinating one. Because you do wonder at this point, at least I do, how much Trump actually knows about the Mueller report. Right, it's over 400 pages. It's got an incredible amount of peripheral material with it, probably thousands of additional pages. I think we're pretty sure that William Barr may have at least looked through it a little bit. But Barr's summary, of course, as we now have established, and frankly, I think everybody accepts that Barr's summary was a fantasy. Right, it was a lie. But I'm not sure Trump knows beyond that. And so it's a very fascinating thing because he's so confident. I didn't commit a crime. When, you know, the reality is that it does point to the possibility of a crime. And so this whole notion of being cleared by it is quite fascinating.
Well,
but I blame Trump less than I do like a Lindsey Graham or somebody like that.
Lindsey who?
Certainly knows better.
Who? Yeah. Who?
Lindsey Graham.
Is he still alive? Okay.
Well, not the one, not the Lindsey Graham you used to know.
I'm not sure we ever really knew Lindsey Graham. Here is, I always think he was possibly a little duplicitous all along. Here is, here's another classic from Donald Trump.
I don't see how they can, because they're possibly allowed, although I can't imagine the courts allowing it. Someday you ought to read a thing called Article 2. Read Article 2, which gives the president powers that you wouldn't believe.
I hate to bring your high school daughter into this conversation, but who do you think has a better understanding of the impeachment process and quote-unquote the courts in Article 2? Your daughter Whitman or Donald Trump?
Well, A, I'm always going to go with the kid. But B, if you grew up in our household, you know, you actually, you know, the impeachment is a secular sacrament anyway. So it's taught at especially high level.
Secular sacrament.
But there's one other element there too. Whitman can count, which is a very interesting thing. And so she actually knows that two comes after one. and so it's very interesting to hear a president of the United States saying, Article 2 gives the president incredible powers. In fact, it sort of does. And that's why the founders wrote Article 1 first, to give the Congress the superior power to check and balance the president when he abused his authority.
Well, now we get down to brass tacks. And
little one and two there, little math.
Little one and two. This is someone who you have talked about for a long time. You brought his name into a number of our conversations. A young congressman from Western Michigan, represents a very conservative part of the state, although kind of a changing part of the state. This is Congressman Justin Amash in Grand Rapids at the DeVos Center for Fine Arts. Here we go.
Amusingly enough.
Yeah.
You saw what happened to me from our so-called leader, Kevin McCarthy. I read the Mueller report. I'm sure he did not read it. I stated what it actually says, and he just resorted to ad hominem attacks and other various attacks that have nothing to do with the Mueller report. This is the kind of leadership, in quotes, that we now have in Congress. That is the biggest abuse of power right now happening in our government that needs to be addressed, because if you wonder why the president, the executive, has so much power, whether it was Barack Obama or Donald Trump or any other executive, why they have so much power, it's because Congress is incompetent, Congress is impotent, they don't do their job.
So there's no...
Amen.
Yeah. And you know what? You just heard a rare voice, that of a free man, right? Whether you like Justin Amash or not, whether you like his politics or not, and his politics are very complex, but he's free. He's a Republican who has decided he is no longer under Donald Trump's thumb, and as such, he can actually speak the truth. He doesn't have to, you know, filter it through some sort of absurd spin or play some sort of game with it. And as a result, he is obviously not just criticizing Trump, which is appropriate. He is also criticizing Trump's enablers. And, I mean, it is pretty rare for a member of Congress to, by name, call out the leader of his caucus and say, A, he's wrong, right? But B, that leader of the caucus hadn't even read the materials. You know, that's a very damning statement. And here's the interesting thing. We all know he's right. We all know Justin Amash is right about what he says. And it's going to be very interesting I think within the Republican Party, and I don't have big assumptions the whole Republican Party is going to shift one way. I don't expect that. But it's going to be very interesting of what happens when someone says the emperor has no clothes. I mean, it's going to be very intriguing. I want to look at polling of Republicans a week or so, a couple weeks from now, right? And I don't expect there's going to be massive movement, but my suspicion is we're going to start to get a slightly better read of whether there is a portion of that party that is, you know, that is somewhat freed by someone saying this. And I'm also extremely interested in whether in that Republican caucus there might be one or two or three more people who potentially might step up. So I think Amash is a really big deal, and it's not just what he's saying, but it's also, you know, the doors that he opens up. He's a very fascinating figure.
Well, we'll give a little credit to Congressman Adam Kinzinger for speaking up and condemning Trump's remarks on Kim Jong-un. By the way, Donald Trump and his love affair with Kim Jong-un, the failed...
Getting a little ugly there, isn't
things
it?
Things are getting a little ugly there. And there's some people missing, John. They've gone missing.
This is the question I've got, though. I mean, what's the dividing line? How do you get hard labor versus, you know, the next...
artillery shelling? Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, where's the divide? It's like, imagining what hard labor in North Korea might be like. I wonder if they give them a choice.
Well, I tell you what, if I lived in North Korea and I had a choice between hard labor and the artillery shelling, I'd take the artillery shelling. Well, that'd be over in about a second and a half.
Yeah, and I suspect the hard labor doesn't get better.
No.
You know, you could hold out for rehabilitation, but, you know.
All right.
No guarantees there.
Someone who I really don't have a lot of respect for, I've never really particularly liked him. He certainly did some good work during the Watergate era, but I've always found him condescending, irritating, and kind of the perfect mouthpiece for D.C. insiderism. This is Bob Woodward.
Overall, and again, I hate to go back to Watergate, but you had those thousands of hours of tape recordings where you heard the president say, let's obstruct justice, let's pay blackmail money, let's lie, let's stonewall the grand jury. And so that raised the bar on how you deal with the president. And at this point, we do not have that kind of evidence involving Trump. Of all people.
So the fact that they had tapes raised the bar?
Please.
Was he talking about William Barr?
That's a disappointing thing. Well, William Barr's usually around if there's lawlessness to be protected. But that diminishes the discussion, frankly. It's an embarrassing statement. The fact of the matter is, as bad as Nixon was, and Nixon was pretty bad, he didn't go on TV in an interview with Lester Holt and say, yeah, we got rid of that guy, or I got rid of that guy, you know. It's paraphrasing here a little bit because of the Russia thing, right? I mean, you know, that's. I actually think what we've got on Trump is way stronger than what we had on Nixon. Way stronger. And I've read all the material. I know that I give Mr. Woodward his due. He was present during that period. And I very much respect the journalistic work he did then. But I can't wrap my head around what he's trying to say there.
You know, there's a long list of federal prosecutors that are now for impeachment, right? And they've tried cases where they didn't have audio evidence. But I'd say...
We don't need audio evidence.
Well, that's right. When you have... You know, the White House counsel, Don McGahn, was given permission to go and speak freely to Robert Mueller for 30 hours. I think that's pretty... And some of the things he said are quite astounding.
So let me take another step, though, right? I mean, again, I've said it to you 10 million times. Right? We've talked about it a lot. Impeachment is not a legal process.
Correct.
Impeachment is a political process. If the Congress of the United States has a good sense, that the president is obstructing justice, that he has obstructed justice in the past, or frankly, if they really think that he might obstruct justice, right, that there are enough credible signals that when they really look at it, they're concerned that a president of the United States is, has, or might abuse his power. They certainly have the authority to impeach. That's why the impeachment power was written in the way it was written.
All right. That said, though, didn't the Republicans, correct me if I'm wrong here, when they drafted the articles of impeachment against William Jefferson Clinton, did they not draft some of the charges in a criminal manner? In other words, they made a case that he had behaved in a criminal manner.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now you can
It seems to me that that's one of the reasons Russ Feingold said no to impeachment. He thinks they made a terrible mistake in the way that they drafted the articles of impeachment.
Well, they made about 300 terrible mistakes, right? The interesting thing was, and this has always been my theory, is that the Republicans who were pushing the impeachment thing back in, 80 or 98, 99, they had an option to go after Clinton on money and politics issues, some of which I thought were very, very serious. But they chose not to do that because that would have been a problem for them as well, right? It would have, kind of blown up the whole money and politics issue in a whole bunch of ways. So they instead decided to let Ken Starr, explore questions relating to thongs. Right off the bat, that was a bad choice.
Which unleashed...
corruption of our politics versus, Monica Lewinsky.
Which unleashed Larry Flint. With that, we'll take a break. John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation at SliceOffice.com.
Similar to a well-tuned automobile, a guitar requires the same level of attention to perform at its very best. No matter how expensive your guitar may be, we will treat you and your instrument with the utmost respect. Call 920-723-1733 or visit jeffsguitar.com. Jeff's Guitar Clinic in Fort Atkinson, we love guitars.
Welcome back to SliceOffice.com, brought to you by our friends at Madison Computer Works and Jeff's Guitar Clinic in Fort Atkinson. All right, John Nichols from the Capital Times with us. William Barr made an appearance. It looked like he was at some lodge that Dick Cheney had just been at, killing some endangered species somewhere in Wyoming. I don't know where he was, but...
I thought he was in Alaska.
Was that where he was?
I don't know where he's at. Okay. Yeah, maybe I may be wrong about it, but... he was as far as he could get from Robert Mueller on that day.
Here is William Barr on CBS.
One of the ironies today is that people are saying that it's President Trump that's shredding our institutions. I really see no evidence of that. From my perspective, the idea of resisting a democratically elected president and basically throwing everything at him and really changing the norms on the grounds that we have to stop this president, that's where the shredding of our norms and our institutions is occurring. My experience with the president is we have a good professional working relationship. I don't look to tweets I don't look at them as directives or as official communications with the department.
It was just days ago when Mueller broke his silence. Barr was asked about the outgoing special counsel's comments about not being able to clear the president.
He said that he couldn't exonerate the president. You looked at that evidence and you did. I mean, what's the fundamental difference between your view and his?
We analyzed the law and the facts, and a group of us spent a lot of time doing that and determined that both as a matter of law, many of the instances would not amount to obstruction. We didn't agree with the legal analysis, a lot of the legal analysis in the report. It did not reflect the views of the department. It was the views of a particular lawyer or lawyers. So we applied what we thought was the right law.
The Attorney General's...
All right. So there you go, John.
Yeah.
Let me quote Michelle Bachmann here. Okay?
Okay.
It takes a lot of chutzpah to say that.
Okay. Yeah, it does. Yeah. look, my favorite part of it, by far, by a million miles, is, group of us consulted. You know, the way he's describing it, it sounds like this, you know, kind of deep theoretical process. You know, you're bringing in some law professors and, you know, experts, and, you know, memos are exchanged and stuff like that. Do you remember the timeline from when the Mueller report came and when Barr put his summary out?
Days.
Well, it was weekend, and every bit of evidence that you saw was that, you know, Barr, the lights weren't on particularly late over at the Department of Justice. It kind of looked like Barr, you know, headed home on Friday afternoon, and he may have stayed up a little late looking at it, but I'm having a real hard time figuring out where this consultative process occurred. It seems like, I'm not saying that we should be concerned about the Attorney General having multiple personality disorder or something like that, but as best I can figure, the only person he consulted with, he pretty much himself, you know, and he may have brought Rosenstein in, but Rosenstein had a lot of stuff to cover for as well. And so I think it's a pure fantasy, number one, about that this was seriously approached. But then number two, his interpretation of the law, I mean, you understand that William Barr, they're going to write books about him as a historical anomaly, like some sort of staggering outlier as regards presidential accountability. I mean, if you were to look and you say, like, you know, boy, we got to look across the entire spectrum and find, you know, a real extremist who essentially believes that America should have decided to have kings rather than an elected president, you know, that's him, right? His interpretation of the presidency is essentially as an elected monarch, right? A king for 4 years. And that is, A, not what the founders wanted, and the evidence is very clear on that, but B, it's not even how it's been interpreted by the courts, by, you know, presidential scholars throughout history. So he is trying to justify an extreme position, which he has held at least for 30 years, by suggesting that there's other people that he consulted with. And, you know, best I can tell, the only person who shares so extreme a view as that is him, is Brett Kavanaugh. And even Brett Kavanaugh backed off it eventually.
Well, he said that he hadn't seen any evidence that Donald Trump had broken any constitutional norms. Isn't that tacit admission that maybe he didn't read the Mueller report?
Well, the other thing about it is that he suggested that the people attacking constitutional norms are the people criticizing the president, if you listen to the whole interview.
Right.
And it's kind of, no, the constitutional norm is that we get to criticize the president, right? That's sort of at the heart of the whole concept. So right off the bat, his calculus is off. But as regards violating constitutional norms, basically the entire second half of the Mueller report, and I've actually, you know, like Justin Amash spent a little bit of time looking at it, the entire second half is about troubling assaults on constitutional norms. Because when we talk about the term obstruction of justice, we are talking not about a legal construct here, because as Mueller has said, this needs to be passed off to Congress. We're talking about a constitutional concept, and that is obstruction of justice by a president of the United States and those around him. That is an abuse of those, you know, that Article 2 authority given to a president, and this kind of goes to the heart of violating constitutional norms.
Speaking of constitutional norms, well, we fret, and, oh, what are people going to think if we start impeachment hearings, and, oh, what are we going to do? Mitch McConnell, well, nothing's holding him back. He may have a 30% approval rating in Kentucky, but it didn't stop him from going to the Paducah Chamber of Commerce, and someone decided to ask him what he'd do if there was a judicial vacancy on the Supreme Court in Donald Trump's final year of his first term.
How we'd fill it. Yeah, you know, the reason I started with the judges, as important as all these other things are that we're talking about, I mean, if you want to have a long-lasting, positive impact on the country, everything else changes. You know, I remember during the tax bill, there were people agonizing over whether one part of the tax bill was permanent or not. I said, look, The only way the tax bill is permanent depends upon the next election. The next election. Because people have different views about taxes in the two parties and approach it differently when they get in power. What can't be undone is a lifetime appointment to a young man or woman who believes in the quaint notion that the job of the judge is to follow the law. So that's the most important thing we've done for the country, which cannot be undone.
There you go. There's your man.
The longest, that is the longest, slowest use of the English language to say simply that I'm a hypocrite that I've ever heard.
It was.
If he had simply just said, you know, look, I'm a hypocrite, you know, and I'm a partisan, I've got power and I'm going to do what I want with it. Two things. Number one, it would have been more convenient. Wouldn't have had to play that whole clip. But number two, I would have actually had significantly more respect for Mitch McConnell. So this quaint little notion that you're going to follow the law, well, the fact is that it is a quaint little notion. Historically, we have approved Supreme Court justices in presidential election years. And that happened, you know, by Eisenhower putting people on the court.
Reagan.
Brandeis was put on. You know, no, the history is extremely long and detailed on this. And so he lied when he said it wasn't the case. Interestingly enough, I don't mind that he says now that he would approve it, right? Because that is, of course, the Senate's job. It is the Senate's job to take up a judicial nomination when the person is nominated, and that includes Donald Trump. That's true. But the thing is, he didn't do it when Barack Obama nominated. And so what he is essentially saying is, and he, of course, won't say this, is that Neil Gorsuch is an illegitimate Supreme Court justice. That because he now accepts the standard that you should take a nomination up and approve or disapprove, he didn't do that with Merrick Garland. He held an opening for the next president of the United States. And, you know, there's no other way to do it, you know, to interpret this except to say that it's not me who called Neil Gorsuch an illegitimate justice. It's Mitch McConnell.
The wonderful people of Progressive Organization from Kentucky have just put up a billboard not far from Mitch's house in Louisville. And it says, Mitch, you make us sick. Ditch Mitch 2020. It's a very big billboard.
It is a very, I'm looking forward to a lot of elections coming up in Kentucky.
So, you know, we're worried about what people are going to think, and Republicans don't care what people think. They just do it.
Nope. Well, I think that they have recognized something real, that, you know, the change of modern communications, you know, we always talk about that there's less local coverage, stuff like that. We talk about social media. But one of the biggest changes is that we're inundated with an unimaginable amount of information in real time. It comes very, very fast at us. And I think what the Republicans have figured out is that you can do something today, and in a week from now, people are talking about something else. And one of the most significant things about Watergate, you know, we were talking about Woodward before. One of the most significant things about Watergate is that was an ongoing multi-year process, which, you know, little bits of information came and it kept moving along, but there remained a pretty steady focus on it, especially at the critical stages. And I think the Republican bet is that people don't remain that focused. And we'll see. I think we're entering into a very critical test moment, because I find it hard to imagine how we don't end up at an impeachment moment for Donald Trump. And it'll be very interesting to see, you know, what happens in that moment, whether that focuses the attention of the country.
As Donald Trump continues to do outrageous stuff, like his behavior in Japan, the whole USS McCain thing, the Kim Jong-un thing, his ridiculous remarks after Mueller. Do you think that anybody's minds are changing on him at this point? Do you think he's losing any ground, or do you think it's just baked in the cake?
I do think that there's a possibility of shifts, and I don't. I never rule that out, because remember that the number of people that elected Donald Trump president, that actually made him president, could fit in a, you know, decent-sized football stadium, right? 73,000 people in Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. Had they voted the other way, had half of them voted the other way, Hillary Clinton would have been president, or if another 73,000 had voted. You know, it's, we're really dealing in very small numbers here, and the president has a very low approval rating already. He's got a lot of ground to make up just with, you know, kind of building up the numbers he needs. He's not out of it politically, but he's got challenges. And so, yeah, I would say, you know, yeah, every bit of information that comes, if it moves 1%, you understand, if it were to move 1% of Americans who were Trump supporters to being non-Trump supporters, that's more than sufficient to shift the 2016 election.
Well, I'm trying to think if there's any states that Hillary Clinton won that Donald Trump has gained any traction in.
That's that is a very, very good question, Sly. And I would say that the one place that I, frankly, would keep an eye on is Minnesota, which was extremely close, and the Trump people made a big play for, and there's a lot of evidence that they're going to continue to make their play. Minnesota and Wisconsin are very, very similar states. You know, Hillary Clinton lost Wisconsin by about 23,000 votes. Up in Minnesota, she won it by, you know, I think it was in the range of 40 to 50,000 votes. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not sure the polling data doesn't say that Trump's in some sort of great place in Minnesota, but I do think you could point to a few states where he will play, you know, where he will try to win a state like a Minnesota on the chance that he's going to lose a state like Michigan. And I think, you know, when we look at the data, the polling data at this point, I think the chances of Trump losing Michigan are quite high. And so then he's got to find someplace else. Also, I think, you know, to be honest, the chances of him losing Wisconsin are quite high. But so
I think the chances of him losing Arizona are there.
And that's another issue.
I don't think he has North Carolina or Florida nailed down, or even Georgia, or even Texas.
Texas getting now. You may be getting a little bit enthusiastic there. You know, big guy.
Well, but there's a reason Joe Biden was in Texas the other day.
No, look. Here's the interesting dynamic. Americans should understand that every once in a while we have a realigning election, a great big election that goes way bigger, goes way further than you expected it to. And you know, classically, our last big example of this was 1980, right?
Yep.
And, you know, if we were discussing this at an early stage in 1980, we might have said, well, Jimmy Carter's got a lot of problems and, you know, challenges and stuff like that. But I don't think there were many people going into that 1980 election who thought that you would come out of it with essentially a breaking point from the New Deal, right? That Republicans, you'd have a Republican president, Republican Senate, a relatively cooperative Congress, at least in the initial period, to really radically alter a lot of the assumptions of the United States. And so could we have such a moment, right, where you see a whole bunch of states that are, you know, relatively competitive swing over and vote against Trump, and then you really have a shift? Yeah, I mean, that's within the realm of possibility.
Well, I think the president has done great damage to himself this week with the tariffs against Mexico, and I don't think he's ever really going to do it, but he's caused a lot of damage just with the threat. And I am not against all tariffs. I'm actually quite amenable to tariffs.
You and I are both quite sympathetic.
But tariffs against Mexico over border security is the dumbest thing in the world.
Well, in general, he doesn't know how to use tariffs for the purposes that he wants to use them for. And I'll give you a very good example now. We're beyond a zone of tariffs. We're into a zone of threats where the Trump administration is threatening or signaling to European countries that if they cooperate with certain Chinese companies, that this will trigger a next stage of trade war or a next stage of belligerence between the U.S. and not the U.S. and China, but the U.S. and Europe. And this is really getting us into a dangerous zone because, you know, at a certain point, if you break off enough of your trade connections. This is the flip side of where you and I would like to see trade policy used to raise workers up around the world. We'd like to see it as an anti-corporate, anti-corporate model on it. But there's all sorts of things that can happen with trade. And one of the things that can happen is that it becomes nationalistic in a way that people don't always anticipate. And that is, if the U.S. cuts off enough bridges, cuts off enough ties to other countries, then the rest of the world sort of looks, okay, we see the circumstance we're in, we have to create new arrangements. And on the day that Germany decides that more of its future is tied to China than to the United States, the United States is in a really bad place.
And we'll leave it there. John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation, thanks for coming to SliceOffice.com.
SliceOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.